Welcome to the first of a two-part series about specialized aspects within the kosher dairy industry. The dairy industry, as is the case of any food industry, has both generic as well as specialized aspects relating to its kashrus. Some generic aspects are, for example, companies that manufacture orange juice on equipment used for milk, or factories which manufacture yogurt and use non-kosher gelatin in some of their non-certified varieties of yogurt. These are generic issues relating to non-kosher ingredients or PARV, that is non-dairy product being made in dairy equipment. These are not specialized dairy issues per se. On the other hand, there is an area of specialized dairy issues that are of particular concern to those of us who work in kashrus of dairy companies. The most elemental material in dairy production, of course, is milk. On the other hand, the most sophisticated dairy food is cheese. Anything dairy comes from milk. However, there are many byproducts, many dairy materials, which derive from the cheese-making process. So thus, we have an upward as well as a downward production system of dairy materials. We can begin with milk, which is the basis of anything dairy, or we can begin with cheese. Milk is made into cheese, and cheese is the source of so many dairy materials. Milk, of course, as long as it is from a kosher species, and as long as it is not chalav akum, as long as it is not milk which is prohibited because of a fear of contamination by non-kosher species, is of course kosher. Even though milk is normally innocuous and kosher, it is actually comprised of many, many components which have really a variety of permutations. The main components of milk are water, referred to as aqueous solution, fat, which floats around in the milk in the form of globules. These fat globules within the milk do not coagulate together, do not coalesce together, because the fat globules are protected by membranes, which prevent them from congregating and sticking together. Milk also contains proteins, both casein proteins and whey protein. Milk also contains sugar, referred to as lactose. There are also minerals in milk, and milk contains a lot of bacteria. These bacteria are important for cheese making. Processing of milk is rather fascinating. The most basic processing of milk is to separate milk into its two primary components, that is, its fat and its aqueous solution, its water. This is done by putting milk through a separator, in which milk turns into sweet cream or cream, which is the fat component of milk, and skim milk, which is the non-fat watery solution of milk, which contains the proteins and the minerals and the sugar and everything else that we spoke about earlier. Skim milk can be further processed. It can be condensed into condensed skim milk, which is a concentrated form of skim milk, much of the water is produced, and permeate. Permeate is the watery solution that remains once one has condensed skim milk. So too, skim milk can have its milk proteins extracted from it by putting the skim milk through an ultrafiltration system. Skim milk also is very commonly dried into milk powder, called non-fat dry milk, or NFDM, non-fat dry milk in the technical sense. Whole milk also can be dried into powder, which is less common. Whole milk powder is primarily used in the confectionery industry, in the sweets industry. Chocolate, especially in Europe, contains whole fat milk powder as an important ingredient. That's basically it for milk. Milk has a lot of components to it, a lot can be done with it, but from a kosher perspective, it's pretty innocuous. Let's move on to cheese. There are basically two types of cheese. One type of cheese is called acid-set cheese, or it's commonly referred to as soft cheese. Soft cheese is not a good definition because soft cheese can be produced in many ways, but let's call it acid-set cheese. Acid-set cheese is formed by precipitating cheese curd via an acidic neutralization. To put it in more of a layman's term, one has to acidify the milk. When the pH of milk reaches 4.6 or lesser, the casein proteins within the milk will precipitate out of solution, and they will actually separate and form curds, which is the basis of cheese. The way that this is done is really miraculous. Casein molecules in milk are actually hydrophobic, which means that they are not water soluble. They are afraid of water. They despise being in water. They will not dissolve into water. The casein molecules, however, are the basis of cheese making. Cheese is basically casein proteins, which bring along with them fat as well as lactose, the sugar found in milk. In order to separate out the casein molecules from the milk and form them into a cheese curd, one can acidify them, as I had mentioned. The way that the acidification works on a technical level is that the negative electric charge that the casein molecules are created with is nullified, and therefore the casein molecules are able to congregate together. And when they're congregated together, they form a curd. They form a cheese-like substance. So that's the first type of cheesemaking, acid-set cheesemaking. Another type of cheesemaking is called rennet-set cheesemaking, in which one takes rennet, which is an enzyme, and the rennet enzyme is put into milk. And when rennet enters the milk, it breaks the bonds that make the casein proteins make the casein proteins repel each other. And that way, the casein proteins are able to congregate, to stick together, and form a curd, form a cheesy material. When cheese is made, the casein proteins, as I mentioned, congregate together. However, the majority of the milk that is used for cheese making turns into a liquidy solution. It does not turn into cheese. Only 15 to 35% of the milk will become cheese. The other 65 to 85% will remain in liquid form. This liquid form is called whey, which is a direct byproduct of cheese making. Traditionally, whey was considered to be more of a waste product, an unnecessary result of cheese making that cheese companies had very little use for. The main use of whey was sometimes for animal feed, it was for filler purposes, and companies primarily tried to find a way to dispose of their whey most efficiently. However, over the past few decades, the inherent value of whey has become more recognized within the industry, and whey, therefore, has become a very important part of food manufacture. Whey itself is not used as in food production as it is produced. It has to be further processed. Firstly, when whey derives from cheesemaking, the whey normally goes through a separator, similar to milk going through a separator, by which the fatty part of the whey, called whey cream, is removed. The resultant liquid, which has very little or no fat, is what we refer to commonly as whey. This liquid is often dried into a powder and is used in the baking industry as well as many, many other industries. Whey also is full of protein, of whey protein. Very often companies take whey and they extract its protein through ultrafiltration. This protein extract is referred to as whey protein concentrate. So too, whey is a very major source of lactose, of dairy sugar, and therefore lactose, dairy sugar, is culled from whey by filtering whey. Similarly, the minerals within whey are often of interest to food manufacturers, especially in Europe, and again, the whey is put through an ultrafiltration system to separate out its minerals. There's one more area of whey, or that is related to whey, that I should bring up at this point. That is cooker water. Some types of cheeses, primarily mozzarella cheese, provolone cheese, other Italian cheeses that have an elastic texture, have to be cooked in a hot bath called the cheese cooker after these cheeses are made. By cooking these cheeses in the bath, the cheeses are endowed with an elastic, stretchy texture such that they, when melted, will not run, but they'll have an elastic, sticky, smooth texture to them. If you try to melt a piece of cheddar cheese on a slice of bread, it will basically either remain solid or it will run like water. If you do this with mozzarella cheese, which is ideal for pizza and for other foods, it will stretch, it will flow, it will not run. And that's the idea here. The cheese is put into a cooker at about 180 degrees or so, and the cheese is pulled and pushed and stretched by other equipment that's inserted into the cooker or part of the cooker, and that way the cheese is endowed with an elastic texture. The excess water, the water that is used to cook these types of cheeses, is referred to as cooker water, and this cooker water has many of the same properties of whey. It has seepage into it from the curd that it's cooking. This seepage contains fat, it contains protein from the cheese, it contains salt from the cheese, and it contains sugar that the cheese may have. This cooker water itself, therefore, which is similar to whey, is very often saved by cheese companies and put through a separator to salvage its valuable components. The fat, the cream that is separated from this cooker water, is comparable with regular cream. It's more cheesy and salty, but it's considered similar to cream. It's basically fat, cheese fat. And there are other utilities of the cooker water's components as well. Let's get now into the kosher areas. There is a rule called of gevinas akum, meaning unsupervised cheese. The source for this rule, for this rabbinic decree, this gezera as it's referred to, is from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, page Chaf Tes Amud Beis, 29b. One can find this rule codified in the Rambam, in Maimonides, Hilchos Mahalos Asuros, Perek Gimel, Halacha Yadalit, that is the third chapter of the 14th Halacha, as well as in the Shtur and the Shulchan Aruch, in Yoridea, Kuf Tes Vav Beis, 115, paragraph 2. Gevinas Akum basically states that cheese which was not made with special rabbinic supervision is non-kosher. Even if the ingredients are kosher, the cheese is deemed to be non-kosher by rabbinic decree. Therefore, not only is the cheese not kosher, but other things that come in contact with the cheese may be considered to be non-kosher as well. Let's take some examples. If one were to use Gevinas Akum, non-certified cheese, to make pizza, as is the case with every non-certified, non-kosher pizza establishment anywhere, the pizza oven, as well as the trays, and anything that has contact with the pizza, the non-certified pizza, would be deemed non-kosher because Gevinas Akum, non-certified cheese, was used. Even if there were no meats used in the pizza production, and even if the ingredients in the cheese are kosher, it doesn't matter. The cheese, as Gevinas Akum, is deemed to be a non-kosher cheese, and as any other non-kosher substance, anything that has hot contact with this cheese would be non-kosher as well. So, too, in the case of cooker water that we spoke of earlier, due to the fact that the non-kosher curd, the Gevinas Akum curd, is cooked at 180 or so in its bath, in its cooker. Therefore, the cooker is non-kosher, and the cooker water, which many companies, as I mentioned, recycle and use for further development, is also fully non-kosher, as it has hot, absorbed taste and contact with the Gevinas Akum curd. There is a dispute, a machlokus, among the poskim, the halachic authorities, as to which types of cheeses were subject to the gezera, the rule of Gevinas Akum. The position taken by the OU, as well as virtually every national kosher agency, is that only rennet set, or hard cheeses, as we refer to them, were subject to the rule of Gevinas Akum. This is the position of Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, and it is also elaborated and justified by Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe Yoredeya, Chelek Beis, Simon Memches, that is section 2, chapter 48. The rationale for this is that the reason adopted for the prohibition of Gevinas Akum is the fear that cheese may be made using a non-kosher rennet coagulant. Traditionally, the rennet enzyme was derived from the fourth stomach of a calf. Due to the fact that this is normally a non-kosher source, Chazal, our sages, declared that cheese is considered to be non-kosher without special supervision, lest non-kosher calf-derived rennet be used. Well, obviously cheeses that do not use rennet altogether, such as the acid-set cheeses we spoke of earlier, including cottage cheese, cream cheese, baker's cheese, farmer's cheese, quark, and so forth, these cheeses don't use rennet. Therefore, there are those who hold that these cheeses were not subject to the prohibition of Gavinas Ockham in the first place and do not require any special on-site supervision. As long as the ingredients and equipment are kosher for the manufacture of these products, these soft cheeses are kosher. However, there is a position, notably taken by the Chochmas Adam, as well as the Aruch HaShulchan, which holds that all cheeses, regardless of their manner of manufacture, were subject to the rule of Gavinas Ockham. Therefore, baker's cheese, cream cheese, and so forth, all the soft cheeses, will be subject to the decree. The rationale for this is that even if the reason for the decree was out of a fear that non-kosher rennet be used, nevertheless, the decree was made as a davar shebeminyan, as an unequivocal, all-encompassing decree that any cheeses, regardless of their method of manufacture, are included in the prohibition of Gavinas Ockham. This concludes Section 1. Thank you for joining us.